tell you people, hey, revolution rising. Yeah, yeah. Proof. Yes. Watch out.
Mop featuring Fred Wesley. You may remember him from James Brown's band, on trombone, and Anthony Joseph from my country, Trinidad, on vocals, both contributing to this tune called Run Around. It's from Mop Mop's 2013 album, Isle of Magic. This is Lead Stories. I'm your tree's lead. And my God, am I in a dilemma today about what takes precedence on a day when everything should take precedence? The stories that have developed overnight and even today merit intense debate and discussion. And that's where, if you've been sensing in the last couple of weeks, trying to get the show to be a symposium of people expressing their ideas about a current news topic, a current news event that might be getting inordinate attention, but we don't exactly understand why. There are people in our midst who are listening to this show who can bring incredible dimension and perspective to discussions on it that would differ markedly from reports, news reports that we're getting. And when they start breaking things down, you see that the reports are missing major points, and they clearly don't cover what the crux of the matter is. And so I'm encouraging you to stay focused on these hot news items, as they're called, but provoking in your own mind why these are hot subjects. What is the significance? What is the impact of these news stories? That's a different level, a higher level of literacy. Well, first of all, I'd start off with the news today that Julian Assange has been arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, which has rescinded its temporary refuge that it offered to him for 12 years, actually. For 7 years, since 2012. They gave him refuge at the embassy in London. It's, of course, not ideal living. The embassy was not made for long-term guests. But apparently there was some kind of a break with the understanding as to how Assange, or whether Assange, was towing the line that he agreed to tow when Ecuador, the nation of Ecuador, established and extended this courtesy to him. You may recall that Assange at the time was being pursued. Supposedly, he was to be questioned. The Swedish government wanted to question him and prosecute him on charges of sexual assault and rape. And he was looking for someplace to hide. He insisted that these were false charges. But in the meantime, what carried more weight was the official demand of the Swedish government. In the middle of all of that, he in fact enjoyed immunity, at least temporary immunity, from prosecution by taking advantage of the courtesies extended to him by the Ecuadorian government, putting him up, agreeing to put him up in its embassy in London. Now, it is a fact. The embassy is neutral space. It is diplomatic space. And no local authority or state authority or any authority could invade the space under the pretext that they were going to arrest him, bring him back to Sweden to stand trial. So he enjoyed, for all intents and purposes, he was immunized as long as he stayed there. The embassy provided him diplomatic cover. Now, he had agreed, or it was worked out, that he would not do certain things that would put the embassy and the country of Ecuador in dubious circumstances and trouble. They could not afford to have him break the law while there. And he agreed to that. But apparently, at least this is the assertion, the Ecuadorian government had reason to believe at some point that, in fact, he did not cease his covert work as a whistleblower, as a person publishing secret documents and so forth that embarrassed many governments and many high officials all around the world. So it became a matter of diplomatic discomfort for the Ecuadorian government, and they informed him that they had discovered that he continued to break this pact that they had, where he promised he was not going to be doing this. These are the reports. I have no way of confirming or denying the veracity of these reports. But this is what has been reported, even from the Ecuadorian government. So the time came that he was going to be asked to leave, because now the Ecuadorian government was now in line for serious international condemnation, essentially holding or providing a cover, providing space, providing the wherewithal for Assange to continue his work, and that work being seen within the community of nations, the global community of nations, by many of the members, that this was not what Assange should be doing, and certainly this is not what any country within the global membership should be aiding and abetting. So he was arrested. And clearly, the number one consideration is, did Ecuador somehow fall in the face of, on this point, of housing Julian Assange to the demands of the United States that Assange be given up, so that other countries that believe that he has been doing major harm through his work all these years, they could put their hands on him and take turns at prosecuting him for these crimes. They have a legitimate beef in the sense that, or case to make against Assange, that Assange never made himself available to address the Swedish government's demand that he be handed over to answer to these sexual assault and rape crimes committed in Sweden. And that was supposed to have provided the pretext for other countries to stand in line to prosecute Assange for various other crimes, unrelated crimes, but mostly crimes having to do with espionage, spying, and whistleblowing. So we don't know where this is going to go. People are maintaining protests, and many high-profile people have already come out against the actions of Ecuador and are urging that Assange be protected because his life is in danger. So we don't know where this is going. But that's the latest development with Julian Assange. Now, it is very hard, especially in the world of spying, it is very hard, very difficult to determine who is telling the truth, because everybody's lying to one degree or another. The main thing, though, one suspects from the way things are developing is that they're working in some cases together and in other cases not, to see who will win this prize of capturing him. And then comes the other set of questions having to do with what exactly was Assange's, the true nature of Assange's work. Was he 100% devoted to good causes, even if it appeared that he was putting many governments on the spot? But was it for a genuinely good cause, or was there something else there? We don't know. And we can't pretend to know, because this is a peculiar part of the world. When you start dealing with intelligence and counterintelligence, you have to assume that you don't know the truth. You have to assume that everybody, to one extent or the other, is not telling the truth. And you have to assume that it would take some time before you get to the truth, which may or may not be absolute. But that is the development, and it is a very big development. And we'll see how this sector of public interest groups, how they react to it, what are the alternatives here, and what do they think is going to happen to Assange now? What do they think of the actions of the government of Ecuador? Did undue pressure come onto the government? Was giving up Assange or evicting him essentially from the embassy, was that a premeditated move? Was that as a result of international pressure? Or was Assange all the while that he was there since 2012, was he being spied on? He would be naive to think that he wasn't. Were they putting together a dossier on him to make him an eternal example of somebody who said that he was working in the public interest? In fact, was he? So all of these things are hanging in the balance. But that is a major development, and we have to keep on top of it and watch what happens now that he is in custody. Well, we talked yesterday about the vaccination issue for distinct groups in the borough of Brooklyn, New York, were identified as areas in which measles had become something of a, what's the word I'm looking for? There was an outbreak. And it appeared that it was spreading. The four areas identified in Brooklyn where the measles was being experienced in these communities higher than any place else, these happened to be predominantly Orthodox Jewish communities. Now the story today is that additional communities in Rockland County, upstate New York, also with a predominance of Hasidic Jews, they have determined there are outbreaks there. And so now they're beginning to say, see, the disease is spreading. It is spreading. And we have to do something, because if it continues at this rate, many more communities will be involved. And this is never a good thing for a city, especially a city like New York, where you have so much resting on the idea that it is safe, safety. This is about medical safety. And the stories that are published today say that there's reason to believe that the measles is on the move. It already has taken on that dimension of an epidemic, where the disease is gravitating to other areas. And now the concern is about the overlapping contact and about the ability of the disease to infect people at a rate that they absolutely can't control. Now, we talked yesterday mostly about individual rights versus the rights of any system of government to supersede these rights, or to ask the courts to give them special dispensation in a scenario like this, when medical experts are saying we have to do something, because measles is one of those diseases that contaminates people very, very quickly. And when we have this rate of contagion and the swiftness with which it's spreading, we must be concerned. The counterargument is, I don't care what the city is saying. The city can't force me to be vaccinated or to have my children vaccinated based on its contention that we are seeing movement of this disease, and therefore the presumption is that it is spreading and quickly. I'm sorry about the idea that people believe that what we have on hand, what we have in our hands right now, is a major a spread, an epidemic. We can't, nobody wants an epidemic. But for religious practices, for personal reasons, and for constitutional reasons, the state cannot be allowed to supersede my individual rights. I have all kinds of reasons, or my community has all kinds of reasons for resisting vaccination. And while we are concerned, as the city is, about the quick spread of this disease, or what appears to be, based on the city's evidence, that the disease is spreading quickly, we still hold our personal rights and our religious rights more important than secular rights. So now we enter a new phase. While this argument about whose rights supersede whose rights, the fact is we have to deal with what is laid before us as evidence that the disease is spreading and spreading rapidly. And before we know it, it will be considered, or a huge chunk of New York City might be said to be experiencing an epidemic. How do we deal with this? What is the best procedure? Is the argument still to be my rights supersede the city's rights? Or is the argument to be in the interest of abating or stamping out this possible epidemic, adjustments have to be made? Do I get vaccinated? Or what do I do? If these things are so important to me as an individual, what sacrifices am I prepared to make in order to stamp out this possibility of a ferocious epidemic? From the point of view of the city, you can't be a mayor of a city where this conflagration has erupted and is growing, and you have Wall Street to worry about. You have institutions that are here that are generating revenue for your city. You have a reputation of the city on the line. You have all kinds of things impacting on money, whether people stay or whether people leave, whether people even visit. You know, the tourism industry, the hotel industry, all these things are going to be affected if the story keeps on growing and gets the kind of coverage. That is a big deal. So we still are at square one. What do you do as the mayor, the chief executive of a city that is now being pictured as a city in which an unpleasant situation, the spread of measles is growing, and you're getting resistance from the communities in which it is growing? That's the question. Well, as you can see, we have our favorite Congress member of Congress, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, striking yet again with stupid assertions and getting coverage for the wrong reason. The New York Post made a front page, in fact, out of her assertion. She was making a speech to a Muslim organization, and she referred to the World Trade Center bombing as something some people did. That's the direct quote. Something some people did. She dismissively described it as that. And, you know, she kept moving on to more important things. That was just something some people did. The New York Post felt compelled to, excuse me, to print a front page pictorial of the World Trade Center as it began to collapse. It reminded all of its readers that on that day, almost 3,000 people were killed in this attack by Islamic terrorists. But she never mentioned Islam or connection with Islam or anything like that. She just said it was a day in which some people did something, and she moved on. I come back to what I said originally. And that is, her mouth is in overdrive, her brain is in neutral. And apparently, the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, which one assumes might have had some kind of influence on her by now, but if it is not able to influence her on the stupid things that she has done so far, to now drag people into her errors in order to defend her, they should not defend her. They should not defend her. I said, clearly for me, I'm done with this lady. I had, previous to that, offered two words of advice. And those two words of advice were, shut up. Just shut up. And devote yourself to understanding your new political reality, in which you have gone to Congress. You ought to know how or learn how it works. You ought to be so busy gaining knowledge about the inner workings of Congress and how to navigate that system. You ought to be introducing yourself to members of Congress. You ought to be doing all of that stuff to get a more thorough understanding, not only as to how it works, but how you work within it. Instead, every time you open your mouth, and now I have to say that I firmly believe this is where she gets her jollies, by irritating people, saying abominable things, and causing a natural reflex action in the media. She loves the idea that she's getting attention, even if for the wrong reason. So far, she has gotten the attention of at least one person who has promised, he's been arrested, but he had promised to put, quote, a bullet in her skull, unquote. And she still continues with this nonsensical approach in Congress, saying things that are clearly wrong, designed to inflame and designed to annoy people. And as long as she gets coverage, it isolates her in just the way she wants, which is, I have my own theater. I have my own sphere of influence. I don't have to wait to make a joint statement or join any group to do anything. I can just go out on my own and get attention. Well, okay, you'll get attention, all right. I had said a while ago, I want nothing. I really can't see myself supporting somebody who is so intentionally self-destructive. But more importantly, these things that she has been doing undermine the collective efforts that are being made in Congress by many legislators to advance an aggregate cause, an aggregate interest, to fight for community. She has gone off on her own little thing, and I think it is time that a statement be made, very carefully and diplomatically worded, but nonetheless being very clear, that it doesn't see its job as walking behind the elephant, cleaning up its mess. You want to make mistakes and you want to go do these things that are so disruptive. If you have no problem putting yourself and your district's interest on the line, that's fine, but we are not going to be dragged into your insanity. We have been and continue to be about aggregate interests. We have plans. We have things that we have been doing and intend to continue to do. We cannot be distracted. We will not be distracted, especially when that distraction comes from one person's singular decision. Whether it's immaterial, clearly, whether she is right or wrong, and she has been wrong every time so far. You're not nursemaids. You are not nursemaids. If she continues down that path, we will have to still return to what was in play as our number one objective, and that is seeing to the multitude of issues that we have yet to tackle and win at. We're not here to have session after session with the public, with the media, explaining, well, this is what she meant. We don't care. You're a grown woman. You supposedly have the wherewithal to express exactly what you mean. So we have to assume that whatever you say is whatever you mean. We disagree, and we'll have to walk away from you. We're not going to disown you outright, because that's not our tradition, but we would at least increase the buffer zone between us and you. That's what they ought to do. Make it very plain. Her views are not the views of the Congressional Black Caucus, or even just the views of the majority of African-American and Latino representatives. And just affirm. You don't have to denounce her. You just affirm what you are about. And keep moving. Keep moving. If she continues that, we already know what will happen. We already know what will happen. At the most, she'll be there for her 2-year term. But we already know that she does not intend to contribute to the program, to the aggregate program, in the interests of the people. She has no interest in that at all. Her actions confirm that she's only interested in herself. Okay, good. We are not here to clean up after you. So that's one other thing. There's so many issues. Today, I will just end with this last one. And it struck me how sad it is. Today's the day that Nipsey Hussle, as his professional name has become, is being memorialized out in Los Angeles. He was from the world of hip hop. He earned widespread admiration in that field, not only for the music that he created, but for the example he had begun to set. That example being extreme attention to saving the community. He did this by reinvesting. He did it by creating jobs, by being an example of how it is possible that people in these distressed areas can themselves begin the process of turning their own neighborhoods around, creating businesses, being concerned about the quality of life in these downtrodden areas, and beginning to revitalize the whole concept of Black family life and responsibility for self. he was not at all about living wildly. Of course, in his time, he went through that himself. He had done that. But he also, for quite some time, had devoted himself personally and even his own resources, the wealth that he accumulated through his work. He had done a lot to indicate that there's another path and that people should pursue it to improve the conditions of life where they lived. Well, it's about 2 weeks now since he was murdered. And it wasn't just a murder, it was an assassination. He had purchased a complex and was in the process of creating a whole new reality. He had a store. He had several stores. He encouraged other people to create an economic hub in that community. It was working. It was producing results. And he was expanding. And yet, it wasn't that he maintained an attitude, I'm better than you. His attitude was, I am you. I'm just like you. And I'm struggling in my own way to show you the possibilities that we have in our hands to turn things around ourselves. Whatever the genesis is of a difficulty that he appeared to have, or somebody appeared to have with him, that ended in him being cut down in a hail of bullets right in front of his store, where he had gone, by the way, to help a young man who had just gotten out of jail. He had gone there to give him a bunch of new clothes to psychologically prepare him for a new life. And it was there on March the 31st that he was cut down, savagely cut down. He was the father of three children. He was they weren't married, but he was a husband in every sense of the word. He was a good son, his parents attest. He was a good friend. So many have attested. And today, they had to move this memorial service to, in effect, a stadium. So many people wanted to pay their respects. It's the same stadium where Michael Jackson was memorialized. So popular, so important he was. Nipsey Hussle, an Eritrean born with the name Ermias Asgadan. Comes from a family, an Eritrean family that had migrated to the United States so long ago, had achieved so much, but it is widely, almost unanimously acknowledged that he was interested in making a massive contribution. What makes it sad for me today is that we didn't know him. There's a huge part of the world, the black world especially, that didn't get to know him or to know about him this way. And it suggests that as a community, we are so estranged from each other for all kinds of reasons, manufactured reasons and natural reasons, but we are alienated from each other. Yes, I'm older, but I know a whole lot about my community. But this is not a community I know well. And that says to me that the estrangement within our community has become so deep and so complete. I can't help but believe it wasn't inevitable, but it was orchestrated, that there should be such a gulf even within our community, that one half of our community doesn't know anything about the other half. And we're okay with it. And that in that other half that doesn't know us and we don't know them, there's a way of life that has nothing to do with how we have been socialized all these years. And that was one of the things that struck me when the news broke and the media just saturated us about reports about this young man. And we get to know of his existence and we get to know a bit about him because he was murdered. And therefore we get to know of him in the context of violence, of a kind of disease that people of his age, people of his profession, that's what they specialize in, and we reject it. And so the implication is, it's okay if you didn't know him, but you can know him now that he's dead. What a horrible statement that is. Why can't we know each other? Why don't we know each other? This is a young man from what I'm just learning about his life. We all should have known him a long time ago. We all should have surrounded him and celebrated him and what it is he was trying to accomplish and how consistent he was about reaching beyond himself back to the community, to give, even sacrificially, to give back. The bridge, here was a guy who bridged for us the reality we've been seeking. Here's an African, young African guy, on his own, bridging a gap that within the African American community, it is discussed largely cosmetically and, you know, in Black History Month. Here's a guy at age 33 who was living the philosophy, and we didn't know him. We had no appreciation for what, not only what he was trying to do, but what he actually achieved and continued to stay in his community, which nobody could deny, significantly succumbed to all of the evils of self-destruction. I felt so sad that I did not know him. I feel a sense of deprivation about that. And I mourn not just for him, even though I'm just learning about this young man. The mourning is that the whole community did not understand the preciousness of his life, did not stand with him, did not surround him and encourage him. We had to wait for the unfolding of the final chapter of his life, which by now has become something of a no surprise. They kill each other over inconsequential stuff. They cannot stand the idea of allowing people to just blossom. They have nothing to give to advance a cause, to help someone. So they destroy those who come in their midst and are doing exactly what they ought to do, encouraging them both by example and through personal encouragement to do the same. What an awful 2 weeks I've had over this. And still, few would recognize that this is a moment where we should turn inward and contemplate and think of how to get ourselves out of this morass. Chart a new course that elevates us, not destroys us, gives us a way to see a future of promise. Help us to understand the logic of returning to the values we were taught so long ago, to build community, to help each other, to advance our culture collectively, to do the right thing, to quote the title of the film. And more so, to recognize how deep the scars are in our own communities. That this is an acceptable way. It is alarming, and we will be alarmed for a good week or so, and life goes on. Today, tens of thousands of people are assembled to commemorate the life of one person. And tomorrow, life returns to normal. No change. No commitment to change. Only to wait for the next tragedy. And it's coming. It's coming. Do we have the guts? Do we have the spirit of Nipsey Hussle to help change course, to avert total destruction, to avert the apocalypse? Do we have that kind of guts? Do we have that kind of commitment? What we can say is, at tremendous cost, we are given yet another chance, yet another example of self-sacrifice, that we would stop and carefully think about our circumstances, about our future, our collective future, and what role we possibly can play to make a change in our circumstances. And let's stop the cycle. We will not. We will just not persevere going this way. It is already catastrophic. I don't see where it could be more catastrophic. I don't need to recite here the long list of things that are wrong with our community. But I wanted to share with you that in the midst of all these dark things that are happening, we have had extraordinary luck and privilege to witness the departure from the norm. There are people still working very hard in their own way and at great sacrifice to lead us in another direction by their own example. He was not doing this for pay. He was not doing this for praise. He was doing this because these were the values that he learned. And even for a while, he went off a little bit, went off the rails. He came right back, and he was solid. Everybody acknowledges he was not a faker. So I share with you today a kind of personal grief for someone I never met, someone I never knew, but whose life, whose essence spoke directly to what I recognize as the extraordinary need we have for people like that, and how we must pay homage, even in these horrible circumstances, to the bravery and the selflessness of people who understand that the circumstances are so enormous and almost guaranteed to destroy us all, that he stood up and he remained consistent and he remained true to his own convictions about the need to help. He did that. And again, I don't know him. Never met him, but he has earned a place in my heart for what he did with his life and for what he now inspires others to do, myself included, to continue this journey of commitment to our community. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to say my word today. It was very heavy on my heart for the past almost 2 weeks. And more than anything, I encourage us to get to know each other in whatever spheres of influence we're in, and see the work that people are doing in their own way to make life better, to extend themselves beyond themselves for our collective good. Thanks for listening. We'll join each other again tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Thank you.
Let me tell you, people, hey, revolution rising. Yeah, yeah.